Welcome to Thriving Together, stories from CCEJ, a podcast from the California Conference for Equality and Justice. Our mission is to educate and empower youth and adults to lead change for equity and justice in our communities. I'm Daniel Solis, your host, and I'm excited to share with you today's episode that will explore restorative justice. We'll be hearing from two of CCEJ staff, Sarah Howlett and Nargis Agoub, as they discuss how restorative justice can help strengthen the ways people authentically connect with each other in more equitable and healthier ways. Let's listen.
Hello, everyone, and thank you so much for joining us today. My name is Vanessa Rodriguez. I am CCEJ's development manager, and today I am joined with Nargis and Sarah from our institutional transformation team. Go ahead and introduce yourself.
Hello, my name is Nargis. I use she, they pronouns. I am a trainer and coach here at CCEJ, and my journey with CCEJ began about 6 years ago. I got trained up to be a Conscious Classrooms facilitator with our Building Bridges for Youth department, and I've been on staff for 2 years.
Hi there, I am Sarah Howlett. I use she, her, hers pronouns, and I am the director of our Adult Training and Coaching department here at CCEJ. I spent the first half of my career working with youth in the Tampa Bay area of Florida and moved to Los Angeles about 5 years ago and have been with CCEJ ever since.
We will get started with a check-in question. So how would you describe your training slash facilitation styles in 1 to 3 words?
I would say my facilitation style is adaptive and grounding.
I would describe my facilitation style as responsive, hopefully empowering. And when I am at my best, it's also playful.
Thank you so much. That should be a teaser, a taste for things to come should you decide to train with our adult training and coaching programs. How would you define restorative justice in simple terms?
I would describe restorative justice as a way of being that is relationship-centered, and it's something that can be practiced as kind of a daily way of being in all of our interactions with the folks that we're in community with, that we work with. And it's also something that can be used to address harm in a way that also centers relationships.
And when I think about how restorative justice is different from more traditional ways that we address conflict, usually our forms of discipline and punishment really center rules. And when we're thinking about moving to a more restorative way of being, we're really trying to center relationships and people's humanity.
For those listeners who may not be familiar with a restorative justice process, can you share an example of how CCEJ trains others to use RJ to address conflict?
So generally when folks are a little bit familiar with restorative justice, they've mostly heard of it as an intervention, like Nargis was saying, for when harm happens. So if something goes wrong, we hurt each other, we harm each other in some way, and then we use restorative justice circles mostly to bring people back together. And that's absolutely true. In our work, we like to actually zoom out a little bit and start before that point. So when we're thinking about training folks in restorative justice practices, we're really talking about transforming the culture of a community to be more relationship-centered at all times. So we actually start with things like community-building circles, using restorative dialogue in our daily interactions, incorporating games and team builders into everything that we do, so that the culture is already centering relationships by the time that harm happens. So an example of one of our partners who uses restorative justice in their processes, we work with a lot of school partners, and some of them have a model where they might have one or two people on site who are responsible for restorative justice at those sites. And so what we like to do is kind of decentralize that work so that that person, all of the labor of kind of moving the organization and the school toward restorative justice is not on that one person. And so we like to train everybody at that school site, all of the faculty and staff, having the leadership and administration go through training so that they also understand, you know, what that role looks like in terms of the policies and procedures end of things, all the way down to every single person who interacts with other people on that campus, so that everybody is really invested in creating that culture.
Can you share any specific successes?
Absolutely. All of this work is transformative in different ways. When I think about partners that question comes to mind around kind of transformative moments, I have one in mind, a workplace who we trained moving through all of our restorative justice training series, so that they started with kind of the culture building aspects of it, then moved to progress to how to use restorative justice as an intervention for harm. And one of the moments kind of throughout that process in terms of when we were working with them that really stuck out is that there was a moment when two coworkers had conflict with each other. And ordinarily, it would have been handled in a very kind of passive-aggressive manner, conflict-avoidant manner, where folks were just would normally have kind of ignored the conflict and moved on, but you could still kind of feel the tension. And after going through some of even the initial trainings before they had even gotten to kind of the intervention side of things, just some of the initial trainings, they ended up resolving that conflict using some of their restorative dialogue skills and just kind of leaned into seeing each other as full-fledged humans who make mistakes and were able to resolve that conflict without it escalating or kind of impacting other people in the workplace. So that moment of success definitely comes to mind.
What are some common misconceptions about restorative justice or criticisms that you've heard, and how do you respond to those?
One that I want to highlight is that restorative justice is a new philosophy. We always talk about how restorative justice is rooted in a lot of indigenous wisdoms around centering relationships, around forgiveness, around community. And for a lot of folks who may have just heard about restorative justice, they might think that it's a new concept and it's a new sort of framework, but the reality is that we're really pulling from and rooting into a lot of indigenous wisdom when it comes to the values that we center when it comes to restorative justice. And the other one I'll highlight is that restorative justice is just about circles. So that is another common misconception. When people think about restorative justice, they might immediately think about some community building circles that they may have been involved in or have led. And that is one key part of restorative justice, but it doesn't encompass all of what restorative justice is asking of us. And it's really just thinking about how do we center relationships and center folks in our community, both in community building circles, but also outside of them.
Also hear a lot that there's no accountability in restorative justice, that it just kind of lets everybody do whatever they want. And in our work, we talk a lot about exactly what Narjis was just saying, centering folks' humanity, and really kind of untangling words like discipline, punishment, consequences, accountability. All of those things tend to get collapsed in our regular kind of daily conversations around harm. And so when we're able to kind of disentangle those things, we can approach accountability by acknowledging that all of us are human and that all of us deserve dignity and respect even when we have caused harm, and that also does not excuse us from being responsible for the things that we have done.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'd also like to highlight one of CCEJ's core values is accountability. So in this way, we really are practicing what we preach. What are some small ways that someone listening could do to incorporate restorative justice practices or restorative practices in their day-to-day lives?
I love this question. What immediately comes to mind is disrupting the black and white thinking that likes to categorize people into good people and bad people, or people who have done certain things and people who have not done certain things. And really realizing that all of us make mistakes, all of us have caused harm, all of us will cause harm, and none of those things make us disposable, none of those things make us bad people. We're all accountable for the impacts that we have, and at the same time, we can co-create a different world. And so I would invite us in our day-to-day lives to think about moments when we might be jumping to a conclusion or putting somebody in a box or kind of writing someone off in a way where we're not taking their humanity into account.
Before we wrap up, I'd like to just open it up a little bit. Do either one of you have anything else you'd like to share about restorative justice as a whole, restorative justice at CCEJ specifically?
What's coming to mind for me is that restorative justice can sometimes feel heavy with jargon and practices, and like Narjis was saying, it can feel really new to folks who are less familiar with it. But what I want to name is that at CCEJ, we really believe in bridging all of our work to everyone. So whether today is the first time you've heard about restorative justice or whether you've been doing these practices for years, we have amazing trainings that can meet you where you are and build your skills in moving toward more restorative spaces. So there's lots of opportunity for all of us to get involved in creating a different world. A question that we sometimes get is really asking kind of why restorative justice? So it sounds good on paper. It sounds like a good way of being together in community, but at the end of the day, how does restorative justice really help move us to create a more equitable community?
Yeah, this is a great question. So restorative justice really came about as a means to address the disproportionate amount of discipline that students of marginalized identities were experiencing and continue to experience because of maybe certain biases that teachers might hold. And we know that this story of discipline in the U.S. education system is largely kind of informed by the criminal legal system. The criminal legal system is largely informed by sort of like racist policies, racism here in the U.S., and that the criminal legal system and the U.S. education system are kind of mutually reinforcing systems, which we call the school-to-prison pipeline. So for people who aren't familiar with the school-to-prison pipeline, it really is just talking about how students with marginalized identities are disproportionately disciplined at schools due to things like the zero-tolerance policies, and that disproportionate discipline can lead to things like suspension and expulsion, and that could ultimately lead students to find themselves systems impacted. I just want to highlight that part of the movement for restorative justice to be implemented in our education system was spearheaded by folks who hold marginalized identities, who noticed that their young people, their loved ones were being impacted by the disproportionate discipline that they were experiencing at schools, and how that had an impact on their lives in the long run. Those folks wanted to bring restorative justice to the school system so that there are alternatives to approaching discipline in a way that is more relationship-centered and hopefully doesn't lead to things like suspension and expulsion.
Thank you so much for naming that. That really makes me think of how our systems were really not set up for everyone to succeed, and that they're actually functioning really well in that way in terms of pushing some people out, including the folks you were mentioning with marginalized identities who are currently experiencing proximity to oppression in that way. And so when we think about the new systems that we need to create, a lot of times we need to be doing things within the systems that currently exist. And so I see restorative justice also as one way to carve out more spaces for each other's humanity while we're trying to build these new systems so that there's just a little bit more space for relationships in our day-to-day lives.
CCEJ's vision is of a world where people live free of oppression and thrive. So what will it look like or feel like to you when we live in a world free of oppression and thrive?
So what's coming up for me when I think about this question and this vision is that we believe that conflict is inevitable. So even if we kind of move towards this world where people are free of oppression and are thriving, there's still potential for harm to happen. And we know that that doesn't take away from someone's humanity as long as they're willing to take accountability, willing to kind of center the person who they harmed and create support for the person who was harmed to still feel heard, to feel like what they needed out of accountability process was met.
When I think about what it will look like and feel like to live in that world that you named, Vanessa, I think about the new systems that we will have created that allow for everyone to feel valued, that allow and honor everyone's dignity, that allow for everyone to feel seen, heard, and understood. I think about a world where we have rooted into imagination of a new way of being together that sometimes might still be messy, but still allows for us to be messy humans who are also in community and relationship with each other.
Thank you so much to Nargis and Sarah for sharing their stories of challenges and successes as key members of CCEJ's Institutional Transformation Team. If you're interested in learning more about CCEJ's adult training programs for equity or restorative justice, visit our website at cacej.org/transformation. Be sure to follow us on social media to get notified about any upcoming trainings. Once again, I'm Daniel Solis, and don't forget to subscribe to our podcast to hear more stories of thriving together.